We'll get to Dan Campbell here in a second. You just called me out for setting up a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, this is the definition of a guy that you know is on a gambling podcast, Cash the Ticket. Like, house always wins. You have set it up that you can't lose. If they make it, oh, I told you, the team of destiny. If they don't, should have added a bat.
I look at it differently because the team will have accomplished something if they make the playoffs, and I think he is justified in saying that. And also, he's removing the strike, which is a huge thing. No, he's admitting he's wrong.
Only if they make the playoffs. If they miss the playoffs, he's not removing a strike.
Well, the bottom line is, though, if they missed the game by a playoffs and they added Matt Chapman, they would have made the playoffs.
Again, painful. Painful.
At least he's not saying if they make the playoffs that they would have won. They would have won 95 with Chapman.
No, if they make the playoffs, it is me admitting I'm wrong and taking a strike away.
The way I see it is, okay, mission accomplished by Scott Harris. Whether they make it or not, he is going to be forced to have to answer the question: is the foundation there? Because we heard when the foundation is there, now all of a sudden he's going to have the resources to add to it and add the bat or the arm or whatever it he deems necessary at that point to be a playoff contending team, not just for this year, not just for next year, but those to come.
It's great that we could talk Tiger baseball deep into September. It's football season, though, and let's get to Dan Campbell. He is Lions head coach Dan Campbell. Coach, appreciate some of your time. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, it's going all right. How's this one sat with you now that you've had to sit with it for a couple of days?
Yeah, I mean, it's you never like losing, and especially when you cost your team as a head coach. But I'll be honest with you, I woke up today, man, I'm ready to go. I mean, that's just how I am. So I'm moving forward. We got to put together a really good plan for this opponent. They're playing good football right now out there, but we got to get back on track, and I think we will.
You mentioned it. You said the coach cost him. You took the blame coming out of half in the post game. And listening to some of the guys in the locker room, it seems like they respect that you had that accountability. But there was a second half, and there were some other things that you guys could have done to win that game. Can you just break down some of the issues holding back the offense, getting bogged down in the red zone? Where's, as you diagnosed that, where did you guys go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, really, it wasn't just one guy. I mean, there was, you know, we get down there and, we have one, okay, we don't like the call. You know, I know that Ben had one he'd like to have back down there. Okay, well, there's one. Then we get down there, we have an MA on a route, you know, that's going to be a gimme to get us continue as we get down there tighter. Then we have a missed block, you know. We have a misread. And it was like just one thing after another, and it was never one person. It was just one person here, one person there, and we're just a tick off. That's, you know, that was really kind of the story of the day down there. It's like I said yesterday, we are so close to just blowing this out. And look, like I say, when you get the game that tight, you know, the objective is to win. And look, Tampa, they played a hell of a game, and I would never take anything away from Bowles and that team, what they did. But the bottom line is, you get in that type of game, man, every point counts. Every drive counts. And the last thing you can have happen is for your coach to botch that right before halftime. So I like our odds. I don't do that. And then we clean the rest of this up. We move forward. So look, one of the other things is our run game wasn't great in the red zone either. We tried to get our run game going there late, and really particularly in the red zone, it wasn't good other than our fourth and one that we had, you know, that Gibbs hit it and toe-tapped down there. We got a big game. But everything else, it was, you know, we just couldn't get it going, and that was the plan, is once we kind of opened it up with a pass game, we'd run it.
With the offense in large part having all the key components back, and from the outside looking in, it feels like everything else that you lost from last year has been upgraded. Are you surprised at two games in that you're just a tick off offensively?
No, I mean, look, you're always hopeful that you're going to hit the ground running. I mean, every coach would tell you that. I mean, you're just hopeful that, man, you're hitting on all cylinders and it comes. But no, I'm not shocked. I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't be shocked if we're not cooking by the time we get to the bye. I mean, it just sometimes it takes a minute. I mean, all those great offenses we had in New Orleans, the great offenses that we've had here over the last 3 years, man, it's not always perfect, and it's not always perfect early. And so, no, I'm not rattled or shaken by this at all. We are so much closer than I think a lot of people even realize. Our players understand it. The coaches understand it. But we just have to correct, really, those issues that came up the other day. Just the small little details and the nuances of the game plan per the opponent. And because we made so many improvements from the Rams game, and so we just got to do that again here and take it out to Arizona.
Areas of improvement or maybe getting a tick better, why has Sam LaPorta not been more involved through two games?
Well, I think some of Sam is, you know, he had the injury coming out of training camp, and so we were trying to be smart with him for the Rams game for sure. And I was actually worried about him getting too many reps in the Rams game, so... You know, you start trying to build a huge game plan for a guy, and you don't know if he'll be able to make it all those reps. You know, and then you get hurt or something happens, you just lost, you know, 40% of your game plan. So you got to be smart about that. And I think last week we had some things in for him. Hell, we had a couple of plays down in the red zone they took away. You know, defensively they did a good job. We dumped it down. And so the ball just didn't really find him for this game. But look, he's not somebody we don't think about. We want to get all those guys touches. We want to get Saint more touches, and Saint had a lot. I mean, let's get it in his hands. We want to get Gibbs more touches, Montgomery. We want to get LaPorta. We'd like to get Leaf a couple more, or J-Mo. So we got a lot of mouths to feed, and look, we're going to use everything at our disposal to help us win here.
One of the bright spots, obviously, 4.5 sacks from Aiden Hutchinson. I know you've talked about his effort before, and you mentioned in week one against the Rams, you weren't going to get home because that ball was coming out so quickly. How consistent has Aiden Hutchinson been for you guys, and is this just a matter of you're finally seeing all of it show up in a stat column?
Yeah, I would say this. Number one, Hutch, you know, like you started this off with, I don't know if anybody quite understands just how hard this guy works. I mean, he grinds in practice, and he grinds in the games. I mean, he works and works and works. And when you're a player that has talent and you grind on it and you work your craft and you continue to develop other moves and other ways to win, and then you set your mindset to where I know I have to be two. I have to be two. Because now he's going to start getting three. He's going to get the release through by the tight end. He's going to get the chip from the back, and he's got to beat the tackle. So now his mindset's got to be, I got to beat three. I got to beat three. And he doesn't bitch. He doesn't complain. He doesn't worry about it anyway. He just works. And his craft has gotten so much better. And so when you do that and have that, and then you're talking about guys around him playing at a high level, like Levi. I thought Levi played so dang good yesterday or 2 days ago. I mean, he was so disruptive. But those guys, you know, they all have a piece of that pie, man, the way that the rush lanes work, the rush plan. And so Levi helped Hutch. Reader helped Hutch. Mac helped Hutch. Man, they're all kind of feeding off each other because, man, they're doing their job. They're rushing unselfishly, and the ones who's have the most dividends from it in the stat sheet is Hutch right now, but they're all about to get some out of this. They'll all eat eventually.
Yeah, you can't hand out hardware after two games, but I know DJ Reader has said there are the tools for Aiden Hutchinson to be the defensive player of the year. Do you see that?
Man, I would never bet against Hutch. I mean, he's got everything. He's got everything that it would take to get to that point. It's just you never know. It's a long season. I don't know what's going on outside of this league, but if you're talking about a guy who's got it and works at it and is going to do everything that you ask in a plan and help your team win and play at a high level, I mean, he's it. You know, so. And I just know he's wired, man. He's wired right, and he's just going to continue to bring it. And, like, the things about him right now, he wants more. And I love that. You love that about him. I mean, he just smells blood in the water, and he wants more, he wants more, he wants more. And so he's pretty driven that way.
For Jared Goff, obviously a couple of interceptions. The first one, I'm not going to put that one on him because I thought it was P.I. I don't know if you guys have turned that one into the league, but he's played at a better level. What are some of the issues he's been dealing with? What are you seeing from Jared Goff?
Yeah, look, I think there was a couple of things that, and I told him this yesterday. One of the notes I wrote, I'm like, man, I just feel like a couple of times you're trying to do too much is all. You know, he's trying to keep the play alive a little longer than need be. Just a couple of things there that I felt like, didn't help us. But other than that, I mean, look, he's going to find his rhythm. For some things that didn't go well, he also threw some outstanding passes in this game, some big-time passes. And so, you know, look, he got hit a few times. We were gonna rely on him considerably in this game, you know, completion-type game. They did a good job of mixing a number of things up. I did think he saw it well, but look, there's a few times now, too, where he's in there and the throw is there to be had, and, man, he's got to get rid of it. You know, it's force in his face, and so the way the play is designed, that guy is open, but we can't get him the ball, you know. So, look, he's going to be fine. I'm not worried about him. You know, he's a competitor. He's like any of us, man. He wants to play better. I want to coach better. So he's going to bounce back and be just fine.
Talking to Lions head coach Dan Campbell, I know you said some of the game plan was pass to set up the run, but were you at all surprised to see 55 pass attempts, especially second half when they lost Vita Vea? It felt like, hey, that your identity, that doesn't feel like Dan Campbell football. Get some more rushing attempts in there.
Yeah, I think when we came out of the game, it was like, wow, man, I didn't realize we had 55 attempts, But no, Ben and I talked about this going into it, and we felt like it was the right thing to do, and I'm not going to second guess that. It was really leading up to like it was before, and we're so close to making the play. And, we almost, man, there's a few of those runs, a few of the passes that we had that we were so close. So, no, I'm not worried about that. I'm not going to second guess it. Listen, every opponent is different. Every game plan's different. So, listen, we can go back and forth on all that. The bottom line is, and why you're asking all this, is because we lost the game. And so I get it. You know, I understand that. And if we had to do it all over again, yeah, I might give a couple more carries, but it would still be tilted to the pass game.
Dan, just a last note then, looking ahead. Arizona, road game, mindset. What are the things you stress this week?
Well, I think more importantly than anything is us getting back on track, man. Let's just focus on us, worry about us. We can't look down the road. We can't, you know, begin to look like, what is it? Who won? What's going on in our division? Just worry about what we are here. We can't listen to outside noise. Let's get back on track. Let's really study and understand this opponent. And really, it's about being 1-0. We this is a new week. We got one opponent here. It's one game, and we need to come out of this 1-0. That's really going to be the story of the week.
We'll talk to you after the Arizona game. Appreciate
Thanks,
your time. Thanks, Dan.
All right. Thanks, guys.
It's Lions head coach Dan Campbell. It's 97.1.
I've been talking about injury attorney David Femeninio for some time and his team. And listen to some of the results that David and the team have been able to get for injured clients. $3.5 million and $5 million for individual clients, $11.5 million for another. You need an attorney that will fight relentlessly for you, and you can call and speak to David and his team right now by calling 855-65-CRASH, or you can always get more information on the web at getdavidgetpaid.com. That number again, 855-65-CRASH, or on the web at getdavidgetpaid.com.
Tuesday, after a Lions loss, I stand by everything we said yesterday. That was a bad loss. The criticisms in-game were fair. Having said all that, John, we wake up today, and I don't have a deep concern with this football team. I look around the league. Dallas lost. Philly lost. San Francisco lost.
It's the NFL.
Detroit's defense looks better than I expected. The offense, I don't think the red zone is going to be a season-long problem. The personnel is still there to be a top five offense. I don't have some deep concern. We're going to talk more about that later in the hour. We've got Greg Palm at 8:35, a look at the college football rankings, the top 12. What stood out from what Dan had to say? He's not panicked at all.
No, obviously he's not, and wouldn't expect him to be.
He's not shaken either, I think is what he said, by the offense. He said it could be a couple more weeks before we really hit our stride.
Before they hit it in full stride.
Yes.
Right? Now, I do expect wins along the way.
Same.
You know, even with a sputtering offense, because you can have, you know, out of what, 9, 10, maybe 12 drives of the game, you can have 3 or 4 that look dominant. And you can also have a couple that where you're like, oh, well, we got fortunate. We converted one here, and we ended up getting points out of the possession. I thought it was interesting to get a little behind-the-scenes look at Sam Laporta.
Mm.
In regard, because we have seen this coaching staff, and one of the things that we talked about when they were in the playoffs was this is as healthy as they have ever been. And whether we know it or not, they're managing players' reps along the way because it's all about getting into the playoffs.
Yep.
You've got to have a seat at the table if you want to make a run at the ultimate prize. That's the entire goal, and you want to make sure that you have as many of your top targets, as many of your big-time playmakers available at that time. So if you're going to manage, you know, the hits that he takes, not even just the reps, okay, yeah, we can put him in there and use him as a decoy. We'll use him as a blocker. It obviously wasn't successful, but the ultimate goal is I don't want to get him hit in ways he shouldn't be hit until he is 100% ready. We can still throw him the ball. They did 3 times. But I think that was a little insight there because we've seen it time and time again, especially with younger players. Jahmyr Gibbs last year, why don't we have more touches?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for him, it was just simply, hey, we're going to bring him along at a measured pace. We asked him about Terrion Arnold. Hey, throw him in there. That's a position you've just got to be. It's on-the-job training. And so they handle each player individually, which I think is a great way internally to do it, but it leaves us with questions.
Their red zone last year was number 2 in the NFL. They're 28th right now.
Mm-hmm. In 2 games.
2 games. I tend to think they're going to be more on the high end than the bottom of the league.
Right.
Especially because they still have Gibbs and Montgomery. They still have Laporta. They still have St. Brown. And whatever you think of Goff and his limitations, he was very good triggering the offense in the red zone. That was the reason they lost on Sunday. It's not going to be the reason they lose many games this season.
Well, what's alarming is the high percentage that they lost on in the red zone. 7 trips inside the red zone.
1 touchdown.
Like, that in of itself, okay, you're looking at an offense going, hey, they got 7, you know, bites at the apple. That's pretty amazing,
yeah,
that they were able to get there 7 times.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't have any, like, overarching concerns.
Right.
We can continue the conversation at 8:50. Greg Palm, but first, Heather with the news.
Well, a Brighton church leader accused of hiding a camera in one of the church's bathrooms was arrested and immediately fired. 37-year-old Will Johnson faces charges after a staff member discovered the camera inside of this bathroom at 242 Community Church in Brighton. He was charged on Sunday with tampering with evidence, surveying an unclothed person, which is a felony, and using a computer to commit a crime. His bond was set at $250,000 cash, and if convicted, he faces up to 8 years in prison. Now, here's the executive pastor at the church discussing the arrest.
Throw the
For
book
sure.
at him.
Yeah, without a doubt.
It might actually be the big book.
Yeah, it might be. It should be. Jason Kelce may not be snapping footballs to Jalen Hurts anymore, but the now former teammates still have a ton of love for one another. So Kelce, who is now part of the ESPN Monday Night Countdown crew, was back in Philly for the Eagles-Falcons matchup, and he interviewed Hurts, and it became a really heartfelt conversation. Hurts got deep about what he respected most about Kelce.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
That is
what a
sweet
moment.
That's nice.
Did they hug?
No, but they should have. I mean, I don't know if they did. Yeah. I didn't watch it. Maybe they did it. Maybe they did.
After the interview, maybe?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe before. A little tighter hug afterward. Yeah. That's cute. Okay, so I totally saw this coming because every time I hear this song on the radio, I think of another song. So Miley Cyrus is being sued for stealing from Bruno Mars. Yeah, so her hit Flowers is apparently way too similar to Bruno Mars's When I Was Your Man. And I always, when Flowers comes on, I always think, I always think of Bruno Mars, and I also think of the lyrics because the lyrics are semi-similar as well. So this lawsuit was filed by a company called Tempo Music Investments, and they claim to have they have a share of the copyright to Bruno's song. So this doesn't involve Bruno Mars at all. Like he's not the one suing. It's this company. They say Miley intentionally copies its chord progression and minors and some of the lyrics as well. Who knows? We'll see what end up what comes from it, but I hear it. I know. I mean, I always. Yeah, you would. I wish. Well, maybe later we can find the music, but
sure.
They do sound a lot alike, and the lyrics are similar. This is disgusting. A 27-year-old man who was able to pose as a high school student in Nebraska so that he could prey on teenage girls has been sentenced to 85 to 120 years in prison.
It's not enough.
This guy, he disguised himself as a high school student for more than 50 days, and he was able to be a student in several different schools.
27-year-old dude?
Yeah. 5'4", 120 pounds.
I'll stay away from the short jokes.
Pretty disgusting.
It's awful.
And what's crazy is that he graduated from the same district that he was pretending to be a student in. He graduated in 2015.
Same teachers?
I'm guessing he went to maybe a different... He enrolled himself at a different high school than where he actually graduated from.
How was he finally caught?
I'm not exactly sure how he was finally caught, but they started investigating him on June 1st, and he was impersonating a student during the 22-23 school year. Disgusting.
That's gross.
Yeah, I know.
It's Heather with the news. Coming up next, our college football rankings. It's Greg Palm. It's 97.1. He gave him 4.5 on the day. Either way, ridiculous. Dan Miller on the call. That's a career day.
Yeah, Hutch isn't selfish. He can share one with Levi.
Yeah, that's fair. He is at 5.5 sacks through two games.
Leading the NFL.
Leading the NFL. He has more than like, I don't know, 8 to 10 teams.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's an unbelievable day.
Yeah.
And even if you, okay, let's just say you had 3.5 in one and 2 in another. Like it's a great start to an NFL season.
But he craters an offense when he does that. You need to help with a tight end or a running back. Now it's two, and in some cases, even that wasn't enough to stop Aiden Hutchinson.
Yep.
It's one of the questions we had was what was going to happen with the pass rush? And if he takes his game to the next level, and he is like a Watt caliber guy, like flirting with a defensive player of the year award caliber guy, high motor, never leaves the field, relentless in pursuit of the quarterback. That's game-changing for this team. This defense is expected to be a lot better. It has been a lot better through two games this season. And it's why, as we reflect on the Lions' 1-1 start, as maddening as Sunday was, I don't really have any concerns with this team. Nothing major anyway. And I don't think we were wrong yesterday to vent. I think that's
what happens after a loss.
And I stand by the fact that that was a bad loss. They had so many chances. I think Campbell was too hard on himself. They had so many other chances to win that game, and they didn't, and that's deeply disappointing. But when the sun comes out the next day, and I look around the NFL, and I take inventory of our football team, I don't have any big concerns.
It's really hard to look past what happened at the end of the first half. And I know they had many opportunities to overcome that moment. That's such a basic moment. It's really really hard to get past that. And then you look at, you know, the last interception by Goff, the trips into the red zone, the, you know, ineffectiveness of being able to spread the ball around to, you know, to get it to, you know, Laporta or to run the ball, especially with Vita Vea out. Like, there are some things that are obviously concerning, but none of it, and after having talked to Dan as well, like, it's, yeah, they didn't find their rhythm. They're not in full stride through the first two games.
No.
You know, you look across the NFL, offenses are down through the first couple of games.
You look at, like, passing yards per game, points, all that stuff.
It's not just here. The problem that we run into in Detroit is quarterback's the same, offensive line is in large part the same, even though Glasgow went from right guard to left guard and they brought in Zeitler. I think Zeitler is an upgrade over Jonah Jackson. But they're not playing to that level yet.
Yeah.
I think J-Mo, with his influence on this offense, ultimately is an upgrade over Josh Reynolds, but they're not playing as if that's an upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, Dan talked about Goff, and he said what he told him, he's trying to do too much at times. Some people watched Goff and said, wow, this is going to be a concern. I know who Goff is. I watch Goff with eyes wide open. I know who he is and all of his flaws. The reason I'm not panicking is I think this line is going to do their job to protect him and going to set up well for him. I think they'll run the ball well. I think play action is going to be there all season long. And I think Jared Goff is going to orchestrate this offense into top five status. Yet again, that's understanding who he is and all his limitations and all his flaws. I'm not panicking at all. I was listening to the midday show yesterday, and Doug had this realization maybe halfway through their show. He said, we've had so many people call in and say, I'm not panicking, but, and then they list a whole bunch of deep concerns with this football team.
Right.
I don't have those deep concerns. In fact, John, if we did this on a scale, 1 to 10, 1 is, I have no doubts this is the Super Bowl champion Detroit Football Lions. 10 is, SOL, the same old Lions. Where are you on a scale of 1 to 10? Because I'm at a 2. I mean, there's some stuff to clean up, but I still feel like this team is every bit capable of winning the Super Bowl.
I'm at a 1. I still think they're a Super Bowl contending, Super Bowl winning team. And yeah, do I expect them to continue to improve? Absolutely. They're not going to be the same team in week 17 as they are in 1 or 2. They're not going to be the same team at week 5 when they get to the bye week. They are going to be better, and they can make some adjustments during that week and come out even stronger after that. You know, they just, they're not hitting on all cylinders and should have still won a game not hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah. Again, should have won that game. We understand the frustration, but concern level. Let's go to Tommy in Troy. You're on 97.1. 1 to 10, and what's your biggest concern?
Okay. What is it, like one being the worst and 10 being the least?
10 is like a red alarm, like a fire alarm. Yeah. 10 is really concerned.
1, they're still going to the Super Bowl.
I'd be like a 6.5.
Okay, explain. What's your thought?
It was alarming to me the way Baker Mayfield just shredded our secondary. He passed at will. He ran on our defense, and I don't know. It was it's the same old secondary, and you get another good quarterback that comes in that can throw and run. The Lions are in trouble, I think.
Well,
it's like,
I think we have a disagreement or at least a disagreement of opinion, because I don't see 12 of 19 for 185 yards as shredding the secondary. And he did rush for 34 yards. He was their leading rusher. And I know the one costly rush was the touchdown run.
Yep.
But I don't think he absolutely dismantled the defense. I see it. I don't see that at all.
Yeah, he had two big runs on that drive. But
every big third down Tampa had. That, who was that receiver?
Godwin. Hey, Tommy.
Yeah, he completed it to him, and they couldn't stop that guy.
Tommy, you may be surprised to know that the Buccaneers went 2 for 10 on third down on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah, how do they lose that game?
Right. Tommy, that's kind of our thing, right? And I think you're not wrong. Like, the eye test said, boy, whether it's Godwin on a blown coverage or how many throws to Godwin, they're moving it just enough. Zoom out. They had 216 yards, 2 of 10 on third down. Baker didn't throw for 200 passing yards. To John's point, like, they got to him. 5 sacks?
Yeah.
He didn't shred anybody.
How they lost it was, and you get 463 yards of offense because you're moving up and down the field. You get into the red zone 7 times. You lose it because you only come away with 1 touchdown.
Yeah.
It's pretty basic.
And the question is the Lions offense that ranks 2nd behind only San Francisco a year ago in red zone touchdown rate going to struggle all year? No. I have no reason to believe that this team is going to... When you get to the red zone, John, it's about a couple things. Matchups. You have an all-pro in Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's very creative with his route running and creating space. You have Sam Laporta, who's a big body, conservatively one of the 5 best tight ends in football. and in the red zone where space is at a premium. Sometimes you just need to push someone deep into the end zone with your offensive line. You need to run the football. The Lions have the offensive line to do it. They have multiple running backs to do it. They have the personnel to once again be one of the two or three best red zone offenses in football. So while that's the biggest reason they lost, that is not a concern for me moving forward. I don't think any Lions fan should be panicking about the red zone beyond what happened last week. I think you could have every right to be upset that they didn't live up to their expectation when they faced Tampa. That's a winnable game. When you lose winnable games, you're disappointed. And that's what Monday's show is about. But as we reflect, as we look ahead, as we keep the perspective of what this team is capable of, if anything, John, this sounds so weird. Not only am I not really concerned, aren't you kind of weirdly encouraged rather than discouraged because of the defense through two games?
Oh, yes. And
like when the offense will click, the defense already being ahead of schedule feels like a win.
And so you get caught in this, you know, if you believe one, do you have to believe the other? Do you believe that the defense is good through two games? And then do you believe that the offense will just simply come along? Or if you're believing the defense is good, that the offense isn't there? Like, I mean, it's hard. You get caught in this conundrum because if you're taking a two-game sample and you think it has to be good because they've been good through two games, then the other opposite has to be true. But the offense does have a track record because of the fact that it in large part is the same. And I do believe once they get clicking, they have upgraded where they lost players.
Phone calls to get to, scale of 1 to 10, 1 being no concern, 10 being the most concerned. Where are you at with the Lions? It's 97-1.